It's now time for the Fantasy 411 Podcast.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Fantasy 411 Podcast. I am Matthew Leach, and I am talking with Fred Zinke. I am a fantasy player, but not an expert, for those of you who haven't heard me on this before. Fred is about five steps up from expert, so I think on balance we average out to a regular expert. It may not be quite draft season in most places, but Fred, I bet you and a lot of the hardcore players are at least starting to think about drafts at this time of year. Where are you at in that kind of process right now?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I'll start my first draft of 2016 later this week. It'll be an email slow draft that'll take a few weeks. But it's a pretty cool exercise for people listening who haven't tried it. There's probably about a pick an hour in the league, and the draft kind of spans over about a month. And it's a pretty cool way to do it because when it's your turn to pick, you have a lot of time to think about it. So it gives you time to analyze some of your decisions before you get into a real draft where it puts you under the clock.
I haven't done any of these, as we noted, but it's been almost a couple of months since the last time there was one of these, so we've got plenty of topics to talk about, and we can kind of roll several of them into one to start with, actually. One of the things we talked about beforehand, the Dodgers' rotation is fascinating because obviously the number one guy in their rotation is the number one guy anywhere, pitching-wise, and then beyond that, you have an absolute ton of candidates, many of whom are pretty interesting. As you make your way through this Dodgers rotation, Fred, how do you kind of do the math on several of these, upside guys who might or might not get opportunities?
Yeah, I mean, and this is one where it's not even really a fantasy thing. It's more of an actual baseball thing to decide who are going to occupy those five spots. As you said, Kershaw is going to be one. Kazmir has to be one. Maeda has to be one. I think Brett Anderson has to be one. Do you agree with that, Matthew? Those probably have to be four of them.
It seems that way, but again, it's such a logjam that it's hard to know. I mean, obviously the first couple they spent a lot of money, but I even wonder. You kind of wonder what do they do with Maeda? Is he a guy where maybe I wouldn't think he doesn't start the season in the rotation, but is he a guy who maybe they get creative with and doesn't make 30 starts as they sort of try to manage this transition that has been tough on a lot of guys coming over from Japan?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, on paper, they have six plus starters. They have six starters right now, the ones we've mentioned, plus Hyunjin Ryu and Alex Wood for five spots. And they have McCarthy coming back later in the season. But I mean, Ryu is a significant injury risk, for the upcoming season. And the expectation right now is that he'll be ready for opening day and part of that rotation. He's certainly a good pitcher when he's healthy. But after missing all last year, I think fantasy owners would be foolish right now to just dismiss Alex Wood or any of the pitchers. I've seen that written somewhere, some places where people say, oh, Alex Wood's the odd man out. He's going to the bullpen. To me, there's so many moving pieces here with Ryu's health, with Maeda's effectiveness, with what they have planned for him, that if everybody wants to leave Alex Wood in a mixed league and just say, I'm not drafting him, he doesn't have a rotation spot, I wouldn't mind taking him just in the last couple rounds. I'll throw him on my bench and just see where everything shakes out through spring training and early in the season.
He's such an interesting guy because he's been pretty good for a while, and it's almost like everybody's been so convinced that he was going to break for so long that we've sort of decided that he's broken, and he keeps making starts and pitching well. And the other guy, and again, we talked a little bit, but Maeda, how do you assess him both for performance and health? It's just you don't want to dismiss an entire category of pitchers, and obviously a guy like Darvish has been excellent, but it's pretty clear that transition is very tough. How do you look at a guy like that coming over from Japan?
Yeah, I mean, I've said previously since he signed that I think the very high end for him might be a comparison to Hisashi Iwakuma, where you have a pitcher who doesn't have a dominant strikeout rate but does have strong control and then can use that, especially when we look at him pitching for the Dodgers, pitcher-friendly home park in the National League, can maybe use his control to post a solid ERA. That makes him helpful in fantasy leagues, but not a big difference maker. And then, as you said, there's a lot of question marks with him, with his role, with his health, with how he'll convert over to pitching in North America. So to me, he's someone you probably just, if he's there in the later rounds, like once you've maybe filled your top four or five starting pitcher spots, then you take him and you hope that it works out really well, but then he's easily replaced. He's not someone I would want to count on right now.
With the top three guys, with Kershaw, with Kazmir, with Maeda, those guys are, well, it's silly to say about Kazmir that he's going to have a long – I mean, about Kershaw, he's going to have a long leash. Obviously he is. He's the best pitcher in the game. But, you know, those three guys are pretty clearly going to pitch as long as they're healthy. The rest of them – and I think this even applies to Anderson – there seems to be some risk there when a team has that many guys that if a guy hits a rough spell, maybe they look to other alternatives. When you look at somebody like Anderson, do you sort of downgrade him a bit just because there are so many guys waiting in the wings if he slips up?
Yeah, for sure. And to me, Anderson's pretty fringy guy in mixed leagues anyways because his WHIP was high last season and he's been so injury-prone in the seasons prior to that. So, I mean, to expect him to really help a mixed league team, you have to expect him to lower his WHIP from last year and stay healthy, which he has rarely done. So to me, he's kind of a fringe guy anyways, where he's so low on my list that I would basically look at his early season matchups. I wouldn't draft him even right now. Later on in March, I might draft him if I liked what his early season matchups were lining up to be. But I think he's going to be someone who just kind of flip-flops between rosters and waivers in a standard mixed league this season, depending on who his next opponent is.
All right, well, we move on. That's a lot on the Dodgers. The biggest news recently that I can think of, I think the biggest, most interesting move here was a really, as a baseball fan, I just thought the Ben Revere, Drew Storen trade was really interesting. I think there are about three different parts to break down in that. The first, obviously, is Drew Storen, who's a fascinating guy. You know, a guy who there's a reason that the Nationals traded for Jonathan Papelbon last year, even as Drew Storen was having the best year of his career. There's this notion, I think, in the back of a lot of people's heads. You always wonder when the next problem for Storen is going to come, even when he's really good. So the first thing I want to ask you about is, as he goes to the DH League, as he goes to a park where it's pretty nice to hit, how do you assess Storen making that transition?
Yeah, I think that those concerns have been so overshadowed by what his role is going to be that we haven't really talked about this. And it's as you mentioned, it's not a 100% lock that he just slides into Toronto and pitches every bit as effectively as he had in Washington prior to Papelbon's arrival. I mean, Storen's a solid reliever. He's not Craig Kimbrell. I mean, most people just give Craig Kimbrell the benefit of the doubt. He'll go over the Red Sox and continue to be awesome. With Storen, there is that on top of us really not having any idea of what his role is going to be. He's probably someone as one of the players with the most volatile fantasy value, I guess, in the next 2 months.
Do you think it's fair to say that even if he weren't going to the DH League, going to Toronto, just generally a tougher set of circumstances to pitch, if he were going, I don't know where, Atlanta hypothetically, just if he had gotten out of Washington and had a clear role, but weren't having those extra factors, is he still a guy who would worry you a little bit, or am I sort of overly gun-shy about him from having seen him in some postseason moments?
No, I guess he would worry me a little bit. One thing I noticed with Storen when I was kind of assessing the trade is he rarely throws a lot of innings in a season. Like, he typically settles into the 50s and doesn't really, get into that 65, 70 total innings. Like, the last couple seasons, he's been right around 55. So, like you mentioned, there's just always kind of something there, not a heavy workload. He talked a lot when they made the trade. He talked about last season, part of his problem late in the season was warming up a lot and, you know, not really getting into games sometimes and getting frustrated and feeling tired. And so, I mean, I think fantasy owners, like, if he's the Blue Jays closer, obviously he's draftable in every league and useful in every league, but he doesn't even approach those top-tier closers, even on a team that's expected to have a good record.
And the other part of that in Toronto that's very interesting is there are two other guys affected by this move. It looked as though before this that Osuna and Aaron Sanchez would be the back-end bullpen guys. Now, our Gregor Chisholm wrote yesterday, and it's a topic that some other people have talked about, there's a pretty good chance one of those guys moves to the rotation. First of all, how do you look at Osuna? I mean, do you view him as the closer in waiting, and if so, a guy worth keeping an eye on?
I mean, I think right now, I'm not even sure if the Blue Jays know, you know, which one of those two young pitchers, or if either one of them, are going to end up in the rotation. They have a really odd set of circumstances right here where they know that they need, if they want to use those guys long-term as starters, they need to get them into those starting roles soon. At the same time, they'd be one of the favorites to win the World Series next season. So having a bullpen with Storen and Osuna and Sanchez and Brett Cecil looks really nice. And, I mean, four of the rotation spots, Stroman, Estrada, Dickey, and Happ, are spoken for. So there's that fifth spot. they could put Drew Hutchison there if he looks better in spring training. He's looked good before. They could put Jesse Chavez there as kind of just a workman-like fifth starter, or they could convert one of those high-upside youngsters. But if they do that, they know they won't get a full season of work out of them, innings limits. They could leave them in the bullpen and get that full season of workload. I mean, right now, I think Osuna's draft value goes all the way down to later rounds because you don't know, you know, if you're even be using him or not. Sanchez, to me, becomes kind of intriguing in the later rounds because he was having some success in the rotation last year in, like, May and June before he went on the DL and they put him in the bullpen. He has a lot to work out against lefties if he's going to be an effective starter, but if he could clear that hurdle to some degree, then there's a lot of potential there.
And then the other half of that deal, Ben Revere going the other way, it's fairly straightforward in his case, except that it seems to me he probably gets a bump. Even though he leaves a friendly ballpark, he's not exactly a power guy anyway, but it seems like there is a more open opportunity for him. In Toronto, I don't think it was clear he was the left fielder, even if he stayed. He goes to Washington. It appears he's going to be playing every day. How much do you like him going into this year?
Yeah, I mean, I liked Revere already in the sense that he would score a lot of runs with the Blue Jays if he was their leadoff hitter, and that was certainly a hole that he could fill that they don't really have another candidate healthy right now on the roster to fill that spot. I do like him a little better with the Nationals, and the reason is I think that he'll get more chances to steal bases in Washington than he would have in Toronto. He stopped stealing bases on a regular basis as soon as he arrived in Toronto last season, and I don't fault John Gibbons for that decision because, I mean, when he's on first base and the guy up to bat's Donaldson and the guy in the on-deck circle is Batista and the guy waiting to hit the on-deck circle is Encarnacion, it makes sense to not run into an out. With the Nats, I think he'll get in that National League baseball style. Like, I could see him stealing 40 bases. I wasn't sure if he'd steal 30 if he played the whole season with the Blue Jays, but now I think he has the potential to steal 40. And even if he scores a few less runs than he would have scored if he was the Blue Jays' full-time leadoff hitter, I'll take a few less runs to get a few more steals because the steals are worth a lot more in fantasy.
It also seems, and of course, who knows what Dusty Baker is going to do in 2016. He's not the same guy he was however long ago. It also seems like Dusty's probably, you know, he's a guy who's talked about, used that dreaded phrase, clogging the bases. He's a guy who I think is going to want to run. They bring in Davey Lopes. I mean, it just seems like everything is set up there for anybody really in Washington who can run to run.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, and not even related to this trade, but a hot, hot topic in fantasy right now is should Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, Paul Goldschmidt be the top pick in fantasy drafts? And going with what you just mentioned, Bryce Harper is not slow. And if they ask him to steal bases a little bit more often this season, and he goes from six steals to even a dozen, that would be a big boost in his fantasy value and might kind of settle that debate for a lot of owners. So I think that's something to really watch for. It's going to be hard to gauge in spring training, but I mean, you could try to listen to some comments, read between the lines, and see if you can get an indication if they're going to let him run a little bit more. I've been surprised how little Harper's ran in recent seasons.
Do you have what's your, you say this is something that people are talking about. Where do you come down? What is your read? Do you think that he's a guy who might be good for 10 or 12 steals this year?
Yeah, I think I do. I just don't see him. He's so young and he's athletic. Like, I just don't see him always being a 5-6 steal guy from here on out, like throughout his 20s. I just, maybe some years he will be, but I don't know. What do you think? I feel like he can be a double-digit steal guy, not 25 or anything, but 10 or 12. Do you think that's reasonable?
Yeah, I could certainly see it. And again, I just think, you know, it's not just Dusty. You kind of, when you start looking for every little data point you can find, I think the Davey Lopes hire is relevant. I think it's that's not somebody you hire just because. It's not a guy you hire just because you like him, although he's been around and knows ball. That's a guy you hire because you want him working on guys' base running. So I think that probably does kind of tie in.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's going to be, I think, to me, the number one pick overall debate comes down to Harper, Trout. I don't think Goldschmidt's quite there. I think it's a Harper or Trout thing, and I get the Trout theory based on just his consistent excellence over the years. But I think the steals might be the category that swings it to some way because we've expected Trout to steal more bases than Harper, and that seems like it's no longer a lock. So Harper seems right now like he can keep up with Trout as far as counting stats goes outside of steals and maybe hit for a higher average. So it's a really tough call, and I don't think you can go wrong either way. It's a great problem to have, but this little boost potentially in steals for Harper has me feeling like I would take him over Trout right now.
That's interesting, and I don't want to diverge too far from our plan, but you said something that I found really interesting that I think a year ago would have been really hard to believe. You like Harper a little more in batting average than Trout this year. Is that true?
Yeah, a little bit. I like the plate discipline Harper showed last year with the walks, like, was really impressive to me. And I don't know, like, for sure, to me they're both kind of guys who can hit about 300. I'm just not sure if Trout can get up in the, right now, if he's going to get up and hit like 325 or something like that, whereas I think maybe Harper could. So to me, that's one thing that maybe swings it a bit. And I don't even know, even though it's American League, National League, like, I really don't love the Angels lineup. So as far as just amassing runs and RBIs, like, sometimes I feel like Trout's a bit of a man on an island there, whereas Harper, even though it's National League, like, if they can be healthy — they weren't healthy last season — if they can be healthy, there's some good pieces around him.
Yeah, I mean, it should be a team that scores some runs. Moving down in that same division a little ways, the other piece of news this week is the Wei-Yin Chen signing to Miami. Here's a guy, you know, we just talked about one pitcher moving from sort of unfriendly circumstances to friendly. In some ways, Chen's doing the exact opposite. He is moving to a much nicer place to pitch, not going to see the disabled — and I just gave away my worry about it — not going to see the designated hitter anymore. How do you like Chen moving leagues and moving ballparks?
Yeah, he's always been kind of on the fringe for standard mixed leagues as far as whether he's useful or not. Last season, his ERA greatly outperformed his FIP. So he was, to me, had he stayed with the Orioles, a candidate for regression. He gives up a lot of home runs, and that's trouble when your home park's Camden Yards and, you know, you're facing lineups like the Blue Jays and the Red Sox, and they have, you know, parks that aren't great to pitch in either. And to me, this is a really good move for him. Forget the wins, because wins are fickle. Maybe he'll win fewer games for the Marlins. Who knows? Let's focus on, you know, the home runs. Hopefully will be less of an issue when he's pitching at home, when he's pitching in Atlanta. You know, Washington and New York don't have hitter-friendly parks. So, I mean, hopefully he can help to limit the home runs, which is his big problem. And then if he can limit the home runs, then, you know, his ERA can hopefully maybe stay kind of where it was last year. I can't see it dropping, because I think he outperformed his skill set a bit last year. But if he can settle in with a mid-3s ERA, because he doesn't have the high strikeout rate, he's not a real difference maker, but I think he can be a guy who's useful. Now, you were suggesting maybe you have injury concerns with him going to the National League.
Yeah, I just, he's one of those guys, and I'm not even sure it's fair. He's just one of those guys that I'm always kind of waiting to get hurt. It's not even based on anything other than that he hasn't been pushed that hard. And so what I wonder is, for a team that probably is really going to view him as a front of the rotation guy, it may not be based on anything. It may be completely unfair, and it may be completely inaccurate. He's just one of those guys. You have certain guys in the back of your head that you just, even without evidence, kind of say, yeah, but is he going to stay healthy? And for me, he's one of those guys. I wonder if you have that worry in your head at all, based on just the fact he hasn't gone — he's never gone 200 innings. He's not an imposing kind of guy. Do you have that, or am I just kind of making that up?
No, I can see that. And to me, I guess it's all just about risk management. So if we were talking about having to take Chen in like the first 10 rounds, then that would concern me, because I'd be like, oh man, if he goes down, I've lost my number two starter or something like that. And you're right, I do worry that the Marlins could try to push 210 innings out of him with what they're paying him, and we haven't seen him be able to do something like that. At the same time, if I'm going to be drafting Chen in round 19 of a standard mixed league, or round 21 or something, then, you know, I'm just going to hope for a good season, and if I don't get it — if he gets hurt, you can just drop him, and it's not that big of a loss. If you pick him up in an auction for, you know, $3, and it doesn't, and you get some good time out of him, but he goes downhill in the second half under a workload or gets injured, then you can just drop him at that point and be happy that you got what you got out of him. It's because he doesn't require a big investment, I guess I'm okay with it.
One thing I wanted to follow on that you mentioned: he's a guy who fairly extremely outperformed his ERA, outperformed some of the peripherals last year. But he's done that 3 out of 4 years, not to that extreme, but to a decent degree. And he is going from one good defensive club to another defensive club, good defensive club. He's certainly not going to top 3-3, and he's probably not going to hit 3-3 again. But you think it's fair to say that at this point, one, based on the fact that, again, he'll have a good defense behind him, and two, he's done this for a while now, maybe he will be a guy who at least outperforms the peripherals a little bit consistently?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I could totally see him by the end of the season having, say, like a 3.9 FIP but a 3.6 ERA. And I think that would be a nice season for him. If you could get, say, a 3.6 ERA and a 1.20 whip, like that's fine. I'll take that in a mixed league. And the strikeout rate's not high, but you're probably moving him in out of your lineup based on matchups anyways. And as I mentioned, I don't see a lot of imposing matchups, like, on his horizon in that division where you'll just say, like, oh, I don't even want to use him against that team. I don't really see that team out there for him.
Our next topic is one of the ones that I think is really interesting for a lot of reasons, and that's Gerardo Parra going to Colorado. He's 28. He's coming off a career year. You know, he's normally I might be a little skeptical that he's going to repeat that. I mean, he really never done what he did last year before, but he's going to Denver. Does that completely erase the fact how much out of line last year was, or how do you kind of look at Parra putting all the factors together?
Yeah, to me it's encouraging. And let's start by saying, like, he's going to have a full-time role. Like, they didn't pay him that money to sit on the bench. Like, they're going to figure out a way, and we can talk about that later, but they're going to figure out a way to get him a full-time role. But just focusing in on him, you know, you're right. Moving to Coors gives me some hope that he can, you know, approach or be pretty similar to last season's totals. Otherwise, I would have expected regression. One thing I noticed when I was assessing him is he's always played for teams with hitter-friendly parks. So even though he might be going to even more of a hitter-friendly park, like, he's coming from the Orioles, previous to that Milwaukee, previous to that Arizona. It's not like he's moving from Atlanta to Coors Field. And power's not a huge part of his game, but just the general Rocky scoring at home could be good for him. To me, lineup placement's going to be really important for Parra as to whether he's a guy to use in mixed leagues or not. Is he going to hit high in the lineup or not? He hits for average, but he doesn't walk a lot. So, and they have candidates. I think a lot of it maybe depends on whether Charlie Blackman's the outfielder they trade. If they trade him, maybe there's a spot for Parra in the first couple spots in the lineup, but he's that kind of profile of hitter where he either hits high in your lineup or low. You're not hitting him fifth, right?
Right. And you touched on this, and I think this is the interesting question in Colorado. There was so much talk about them trading an outfielder even before they signed Parra. And look, this is a totally different question in March. You know, when we get closer to opening day, we'll probably know who's still going to be in Denver and who's not, and you'll just say, well, okay, what does it mean that whoever, Blackman or Dickerson or whoever, was traded? Right now, for people who are starting to do drafts within the next couple of weeks, while they are waiting for these deals to go down, or a deal to go down, that I think we all expect to, how do you, again, the expression term you used about something else was managing a risk. How do you sort of assess the possibility when you look at all those guys and they're all really intriguing? How do you sort of weigh, well, yes, he's intriguing, but he might not be in Denver next year?
Yeah, and that's got to be like a major factor. And yeah, you're right. It doesn't even seem like there's a favorite among those three outfielders to be traded. I maybe hear Dickerson's name a little less, but not really. They're all out there. So, I mean, you could almost say that if you pick one of those guys, he has a 33% chance of not being a member of the Rockies on opening day, because I actually was surprised that they didn't sign Parra and make a trade all in the same day. They didn't have the trade already lined up. And maybe they're close, I don't know. But as you said, it's going to happen. I think, to me, it would be if I was drafting early, if it was my pick and there were one of the Rockies outfielders and some other players kind of bunched on my list, I would just not take the Rockies outfielder. If one of those three Rockies outfielders was the highest-ranked guy on my list when it was my turn to pick and I felt like he was better than everyone else out there, I think I'd just take him and roll the dice, because they're not going to totally fall off the map elsewhere. But I would downgrade their projections if they move. So to me, maybe for now, that's a tiebreaker on a pick, but it's one you have to keep in mind.
Do you weigh in at all? And look, we're putting the cart several steps ahead of the horse here. I realize that, but also, look, that's kind of what we do, is looking for small advantages and small differentiations. If it's Gonzalez, you have to think Gonzalez isn't going somewhere that's not a contender. A team the Braves, for example, aren't going to go get Carlos Gonzalez, you have to think. And so does the fact that with Gonzalez particularly, if he's moved, he's probably joining a good lineup. Does that mitigate that at all, or am I overthinking this at this point?
No, it could mitigate it for sure. Or he could end up on a team, you know, with another team in the hitter-friendly park. Like, the park to me matters maybe not as much as the lineup, but it definitely matters to me. And Gonzalez, you know, is going to hit in the heart of a lineup when he switches over, whereas if it was Blackman or Dickerson in a trade, we definitely want to look at where their lineup placement's likely to be on the other team. But That being said, I guess if you're trading for Blackman or Dickson, you're probably giving up a fair amount. So you're anticipating them being like right in the heart of your lineup and pretty key pieces to you. So, yeah, it could be anywhere. Like if Gonzalez, and this is not expected to happen, if Gonzalez ended up on the Dodgers or something like that, would just the change in park effect, like how much would that knock down his value?
Yeah, and it's a very interesting question because, again, say it's St. Louis, that's a blow, but you know there are places where he could go where maybe he's got guys getting on base regularly in front of him, and maybe some of that helps. So I just the whole thing is an interesting question. Again, look, by the time most people are drafting, I suspect we'll know the answer to this. But there are people who are starting to make these decisions now. They kind of have to figure this stuff out. To stay in the outfield in the NL West, Denard Span joins the Giants. He's a guy that I like a lot as a ball player. I wonder, again, you talk ballpark, you talk health. How much do you like Span going to San Francisco and coming off an injury?
Yeah, I was trying to read between the lines on this one like a lot, and some things I was thinking about. In my mind, the Giants are a pretty smart franchise. Like, they've won a lot in recent years. I feel like the Giants, not every decision for any team works out, but I feel like the Giants generally make pretty smart decisions. I was interested to see the Giants sign Span in early January to a multi-year contract. I felt like that was the Giants saying, you know, we trust that this guy's going to be healthy. And he was pretty healthy, like a pretty durable player prior to last season. So that actually made me feel more encouraged about him. I was just talking about this with someone else the other day where, you know, like, he's an injury risk for sure on paper after last year. He has to be. We had multiple injuries last season. But just the Giants' confidence in him kind of makes me feel more confident in him because of the time of the year they signed him. They didn't wait till the last minute. They didn't make him go through a battery of tests right up to the start of spring training. And this is an organization that makes pretty smart decisions. The park doesn't really concern me because power is not really his game anyway. So what we're looking for is, you know, a 300 average, 25 to 30 steals, and hopefully 85 or 90 runs. What we're really concerned about with Span is can he have 570 to 600 at-bats this season? And we don't really know that.
And that's also an organization, you know, beyond making smart decisions, they've got a really good training department. They're good at keeping guys on the field. You know, it's interesting you mentioned the deal and you mentioned where I was struck, and I thought about that contract a lot because one of the things I thought is if you're Denard Span and at the age he's at, I got to think there was some compelling – and maybe the math is just somebody guaranteed you 3 years, you take it, you say thank you, especially if you think you can win a ring. But that's a guy who I wonder if he would take that one-year pillow contract and go back out and make more next year. And so, again, look, we are once again reading a ton into – small amounts of information, but you know that almost made me wonder if he has some absence of confidence about his well-being. If he said, well, look, if I can get 3 years now, I'm going to do that. I'm not going to take the risk of going out 1 year and maybe not having another good year and then being in trouble next year. So I don't know what to do with that. We're very much on the outside, but it is interesting. You can sort of look at something like that in a variety of different ways. One other transaction that I know caught your eye, Chris Carter is a guy with obviously tremendous upside, going to another hitter-friendly ballpark. How much do you like Chris Carter?
It's a good fit for him. This is definitely an acquisition that has more fantasy value probably than real-life value. We don't expect the Brewers to be a really competitive team and him to be a huge difference maker for them next year. But as far as fantasy goes, he has 30 home run potential, and that has to catch anybody's eye. And Miller Park's a good park for him to hit in. So, I mean, you're hoping for 30 homers. You're hoping he can hit 230. I think that's probably what you're hoping for, maybe 235. To me, that's kind of where it swings. He's pretty on the fringe for mixed leagues right now because you have to live with that really low batting average to get 25 to 30 homers. And he was really inconsistent last season. I feel like in a standard league, he's like a really late pick. And the other problem with him is he's inconsistent even throughout the season. He tends to go hot or cold. So it's not like you can just draft him and say, oh, I'm going to find those hot streaks and hit them. You don't really know when they're coming. I think I would be more inclined to get a corner infielder in a mixed league that offers more balanced production, you know, than to go for just the all power from Carter. But I could see it in the late rounds, depending on how you've structured your team, if you feel like you can hold that average.
And then we are going to head towards the finish line here with a piece you have up on MLB.com. American League sleepers going into the year. A lot of, quite a few sort of personal favorite names of mine on there, actually. So we got plenty to discuss here. One guy you note is Jonathan Scope. He's the first name on the list. Guy I really like. I think there's enormous upside. I think Jonathan Scope is a potential all-star type of hitter. Do you see that kind of upside in him, or do you just think maybe he's a little undervalued? What is it that you like about Scope going into next year?
Yeah, I do think there's a lot of upside there. I'll say this, and like I'm not a scout, and I'm many, many, many degrees away from ever becoming a scout, but Jonathan Scope's one of those players. The first time I ever saw him play, he was playing a spring training game against, I believe it was the Blue Jays, and I just watched him, and I thought, you know, this guy is really athletic. Like, he's big, he's powerful. Like, this guy has the look of someone who can develop into a really good player. And it didn't happen right away, but we're starting to see it happen. He was really underrated. I think fantasy owners who maybe their teams fell out of the race in July or August and they quit paying attention quite as much missed what was a bit of a breakout last season where all of a sudden he became a guy who could hit for average and power. And there aren't many middle infielders that can do that.
Yeah, you know, he's just one of those guys. He's just physically impressive. You just see him and you say, oh, hey. And that also could be, who knows what that lineup's going to look like. But, you know, that's sort of the plus minus. If they lose some guys, there might be a real opportunity for him to hit in a real core part of that lineup. He might be in a real opportunity within that lineup, even if that lineup is diminished.
For sure. And, I mean, we saw last year, you know, with Brian Dozier and players like that, if you're a second baseman and you can hit a lot of home runs, you make a big impact because there aren't many that can do that. I feel like 25 home runs is a realistic, you know, there's a realistic chance he can do that this season, don't you?
Yeah, I do. Look, I'm really high on this guy. I think he's an exciting player. And the other thing is they are going to ride with him because he's a very good defensive player, and that's a big deal for the Orioles. If you can catch the ball, they'll ride out slumps. So although he's young and although, you know, you maybe worry about opportunity in a guy like him sometimes, he can catch the ball, and so they'll ride out the slumps. The flip side of that is a guy that I personally am a big fan of. I grew up watching Florida State baseball. Devin Travis went to Florida State. He's a guy I like. I worry about what he's going to be. This is not a guy coming off a fairly conventional injury. He didn't have a muscle strain or something with his ankle that he's recovering from. I worry what's going to be there. What gives you the confidence that he is going to be a guy that is worth it this year coming off the injury he came off of?
Yeah, and I totally agree with you with the reservations, and I have them too. My take on Travis, it comes with that acquisition cost. Because he's likely to start the season on the disabled list, you should be able to get him right near the end of your draft. You get him near the end of your draft, and you should, in most leagues, you can immediately just slide him into a disabled list spot. So now he's not affecting your roster space, and you've just got him sitting there. And early in the season is the easiest time to fill holes in your lineup. Teams are generally fairly healthy. You know, you can find another middle infielder to use until he comes back. And then, you know, you've kind of got that lottery ticket there. That was my thinking of him as a sleeper. With the Ben Revere trade, the Blue Jays have a huge hole at the top of their lineup. So we're talking about the lineup that scored the most runs in baseball last year with no leadoff hitter. They've talked about putting Tulowitzki back there at the start of the season, but it's well acknowledged around Toronto that he didn't really love that idea. And if they do that with him, that'll only be temporary. And he kind of has something to prove, Tulo does, to the Blue Jays, I think, this season, because he wasn't great for most of the time after the trade. So I think that I really believe that the Blue Jays' long-term hope is that Travis gets healthy and he's the leadoff hitter. So if I'm taking him near the end of a draft, to me he's that boomer-bust pick, and do you want someone boring like, say, Gerardo Parra, who we already talked about, or do you want to go boomer-bust, slide him in your disabled list spot, and maybe, if he can be healthy, by May or something like that, you've got a leadoff hitter on one of the best lineups in baseball. And on top of that, he's a middle infielder, a scarce position.
Two other guys on that list I want to ask you about. One is the basically walking definition right now of a post-hype sleeper, Nick Castellanos. What's your confidence level on him coming into this year?
I'd say my confidence level that he can get a little better is high. I'm not so sure that we're going to see a massive breakout, but you nailed it by calling him a post-hype sleeper. Everybody was expecting this guy to just get to the majors and just be terrific right from the get-go. And like a lot of good young players, he wasn't. But we did see some small signs of growth with him last season. And again, there's not a lot of power out there. And this is a guy, you know, he's only 23, and he can hit 20 homers, I think, this season. And if you can get him again late in a draft, maybe I'm wrong, and maybe the big breakout comes this year. But even just small upticks could really help. And I think the Tigers lineup, to me, is not quite as deep as it used to be. Maybe there's a chance for him, if he's having a nice season, to get a more prominent lineup spot and become more of a key player for them.
And one other guy I want to ask you about is just another personal favorite of mine. I saw Carlos Rodon pitch at the College World Series, I think, 3 years ago, and just loved him even then. Just, you know, again, one of those guys you just watch and just physically say, wow, big guy, power stuff, fun to watch. Long-term, I absolutely love the guy. This year, for a guy who's had sometimes shaky control, absolute big-time stuff, in his second big league year, what kind of expectations do you have for Rodon as he tries to develop into the pitcher people think he can be?
Yeah, and as you mentioned, the control is really the issue. We even saw the last year with really, really poor control last season. He had a 3.75 ERA. So, I mean, he was not hurting anyone in the ERA category, really, with really poor control. Now, he really started to find his groove down the stretch. We need to see that over a longer period of time. But this is someone, I think neither of us would be surprised if down the road, not 2016, but down the road, 2017, 2018, at some point, he becomes a mixed league ace. Like, he has that kind of potential. Huge strikeout total, you know, low ERA. For him, it'll just be all about the control. If I'm thinking later on in a draft and investing in someone with a lot of upside, I think he's a terrific target. I mean, this year you don't want to pay for the huge, huge breakout year, but I'm going to pay for significant improvement from last season. Last season, the WHIP was 1.44. I would not be shocked to see it be something like 1.25 or something. If he can get to the point where he's not really, really hurting my WHIP, then I'm really excited because the strikeout total could be really high.
He's also, look, they're going to manage him carefully because he's such a valuable asset, but he's also got the kind of build and the kind of just everything about him suggests that he's a guy that at least in a couple of years could get you significant innings. He's not a guy you hope you're going to have to worry about being one of those 180, 190 inning guys. He's just looking at him, you hope that he's a guy who's maybe a 210, 220 inning guy down the road at least.
Absolutely, and if he's a 210 or 220 inning guy, when he hits his prime, what's that strikeout total going to look like? Because it could look like 240 or something like that, and there aren't many pitchers who can get strikeout totals like that. Looking at this season, if he was 140 innings last season, so if we're hoping for maybe 175 or so this season, well, if he can get 180 or 185 strikeouts, that's pretty good. And I mean, even if they skip some of his starts late in the year, well, as a fantasy owner, I can dance around that. I mean, I'll deal with September when September comes. For me, if I can get just, you know, him pitching every fifth game for the first 4 or 5 months of the season, I'll take that. It's, as you said right from the beginning, it's all about the control. We can't say for sure that it's going to take a huge step up this year, but he did show some really encouraging signs down the stretch last season. And again, I think people who give up on their seasons early don't notice those improvements.
All right. Well, I think that's about all we've got today. This was fun for me. We'll be better next time. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Fantasy 411 podcast.